Now, Hastings, you understand what I mean when I talk of two crimes.
What about the piece of lead piping?
Ha, bravo!
You remember it.
To disfigure the victim's face so that it would be unrecognizable.
And the dagger. There must have been two daggers there.
Yes. They stabbed Tramp with one dagger to give credence to Madame Renault's tale. The second killed Connaught himself. Jacques must have had two daggers made.
So, what now?
Now we must start all over again. What time is the afternoon boat from Calais?
About five, I believe.
That will do very well. We shall just have time.
Why are we going back to England?
To find a possible witness.
Who?
Miss Bella Duvine. I think I shall be able to find her, particularly with the help of this photograph.
He had found it in Jack Renault's desk. With love from Bella was scrawled across the corner, but it wasn't that that made my blood run cold. The likeness was not first rate, but for all that, it was unmistakable to me. It was the face of Cinderella. The Dulcie Bella Kids. That was the name she and her sister were known by. Poirot tracked them down to a nasty little theatre in Coventry. There she was. There they both were. One flaxen-haired, one dark. Matching as to size, with short, fluffy skirts and big bows in their hair. They danced and did quite tricky acrobatic feats.
Charming, don't you agree?
I don't think I can sit through the rest of the bill. I need a breath of fresh air. I'll see you back at the hotel.
Ah, go by all means, mon ami. I shall stay to the end.
It was only a few steps from the theatre to our hotel. I took a large whiskey and soda up to the sitting room and sat staring into the dwindling fire. Suddenly, I was aware of someone standing behind me.
I saw you in front. When you got up to go, I slipped on a cloak and came after you. What are you doing here? Was the man with you the detective?
Yes.
Is he looking for me?
Don't cry. Please don't cry. You're safe with me. I'll take care of you. Look, I know everything.
Oh, no, but you don't.
I think I do. Why did you take the dagger?
I was afraid there might be fingerprints on it. Are you going to give me up to the police?
Of course I'm not.
Why not?
Because I love you.
You can't. What do you know? What do you know, then?
Well, I know that you came to see Renault that night. He offered you a check and you tore it up. And then you left the house.
Go on. What then?
I don't know whether you knew Jack Renault would be coming that night, but you waited. Just before 12, you saw a figure on the golf links, and you recognized the overcoat as Jack's.
Go on.
You had threatened to kill him in your letter, and now you knew about Mutt. You plunged the dagger into him. I don't believe for a moment that you meant to kill him.
You're right. I can see it all as you tell it. And you say you love me, knowing what you do. How can you love me?
I don't know. I think love is like that, a thing one cannot help. I don't ask for anything in return. Love him still if you want to, but let me help you. That's all I ask.
You think that I love Jack? Not as I love you. Ever as I love you.
Oh, Cinderella.
What a pretty picture.
Poirot.
Help me.
Quick, I'll hold him.
Up, Hastings. Is this not a little high-handed?
Get out of here, Cinderella, as fast as you can.
Oh, mon ami, you do this sort of thing very well. The strong man holds me in his iron grasp, and I am helpless as a child. But all this is uncomfortable and slightly ridiculous. Let us sit down and be calm.
You won't go after her.
Am I, Giro? Let me go. Without doubt, I shall be able to find her when the time comes.
I suppose I haven't got the right anymore to ask what happens next.
On the contrary. We are going back to France without delay.
Oui.
Of course. You know very well you can't afford to let Papa Poirot out of your sight.
We crossed the channel by the morning boat and went straight back to the Hotel des Bains. A letter had been left for Poirot at the reception desk.
Dear Monsieur Poirot, if you get this, I beg of you to come to my aid.
I have no one to turn to. And at all costs, Jack must be saved. I implore you on my knees to help us. Martha Dobray.
You'll go?
At once.
I was in despair. I had no idea what to do. They won't even let me visit Jacques in prison. And I'm going mad. Is it true what they say, that he doesn't deny the crime?
I fear so, mademoiselle.
But it's impossible. He couldn't have done it. I don't believe it.
Well, neither do I believe it, mademoiselle.
But then why doesn't he speak? I don't understand.
Perhaps because he is screening someone.
Screening someone? Do you mean his mother? I suspected her from the very beginning. Who inherits all that vast fortune? She does. It is easy to wear widow's weeds and play the hypocrite.
Mademoiselle, if we are to work together, we must have things clear. First, I will ask you a question.
Yes, monsieur?
Are you aware of your mother's real name? Ah, there. No. Calm yourself, Brigitte. I see that you do know. Now, a second question. Did you know who Monsieur Renaud really was?
Monsieur Renaud?
Ah, I see you do not know that. Then I shall explain a few of the facts to you, but I must be brief. We have to go to Saint-Omé to be present when Jacques is brought before the court.
Please save him, monsieur. I love him so. Save him. Save him.
Renaud, do you deny that you were in Merlinville on the night of the crime?
I have told you that I was in Cherbourg.
He was a changed man. His cheeks had fallen in and there were deep black circles round his eyes. He made no attempt to defend himself. It was obvious to me that his only concern was to conceal anything that might incriminate Bella.
I have no alternative but to commit you for trial.
Monsieur Altenny, I swear that I did not kill my father.
Monsieur le juge! Monsieur le juge!
How dare you disturb the sitting of the court?
There is a lady here who says...
Who says what? This is highly irregular. Get out!
But a slender figure, dressed all in black, her face hidden by a long veil, had made her way into the courtroom.
You are the juge d'instruction, Monsieur Auté.
She raised her veil, and I was seized with fear. But though as like her as two peas, this was not Cinderella. It was the face I had seen in the photograph Poirot had found in Jack Renault's room.
My name is Bella Duvine. I wish to give myself up for the murder of Monsieur Renault.
There is a letter for you, mon ami. I suspect it is from your little acrobat.
My friend, you will know all by the time you get this. Nothing that I can say will move Bella. She has gone to give herself up. You will know now that I...
I deceived you, and that where you gave me trust, I repaid you with lies. But once I knew that you thought I was Bella, and that you intended to save me, I knew I had to use you to help me save her. So I went on lying. But as soon as Bella read in the paper that Jack had been arrested, it was all up. I'm very tired. I can't write anymore.
Dulcie Duvine. And you mean to say you knew all along?
Yes, my friend.
Why didn't you tell me?
To begin with, I could hardly believe it conceivable that you could make such a mistake. The sisters are very alike, but by no means incapable of distinguishment.
Why didn't you tell me that night in the hotel in Coventry?
You were rather high-handed in your methods. You did not give me a chance. And I was a little hurt at your want of faith in me.
But where am I to find her? There's no address on the letter. There's a French stamp, that's
no,
all.
No. Do not excite yourself. Leave it to Papa Poirot. I will find her for you as soon as I have a few minutes. Ah, Monsieur Jacques. My heartiest congratulations.
I had to come and see you. What's going to happen to Bella? I went through all that to protect her, and now it's all no use.
If I were you, I should not distress myself unduly. The French courts are very lenient to youth and beauty and the crime passionnel.
I've treated her shamefully. I should have told her the truth after I met Marthe, but I was too much of a coward.
Could you tell us exactly what did happen on that terrible evening?
Well, as I told you, I came from Cherbourg to see Marthe. The train was late, and I decided to take a shortcut across the links. Then I heard a strange cry. It wasn't loud, a sort of choke and gasp. I came round the corner of a bush. In the moonlight, I saw a figure lying face downwards with a dagger sticking in his back. Then I looked up and saw her. She was looking at me as though she saw a ghost. All expression seemed frozen out of her face by horror. And she turned and ran.
And afterwards?
I thought I'd better get away as fast as I could. I went back to Cherbourg.
Thank you. There is something you should know. Your mother has regained consciousness. I am about to go to the village in Vievre. Will you come with us?
I will come, but I would like to ask a favor of you.
Whatever you wish.
How would it be if you went on first to break the news to mother that I'm free?
While you break it in person to Mademoiselle Marthe. Of course, by all means. But let us be off.
When we got to the villa, Poirot insisted on going up to see Madame Renaud alone, while I paced about the salon. It was some time before he reappeared, looking unusually grave.
I would hardly have credited it, but women are very unpredictable.
What has happened?
I fear we are in for serious trouble. Madame Renaud...
Oh, here are Jack and Mart. We came as quickly as we could.
It is better. You should not go up. Your mother is very upset.
But I must see her.
No, Monsieur Jacques.
But Jacques and I...
In any case, do not take Mademoiselle with you. And if you do insist on going up...
I thank you for your good offices, Monsieur Poirot. But I will make my own wishes clear.
Mother.
I am no mother of yours. You are no son of mine. From this day and hour, I renounce you.
But Mother, what have I done?
Your father's blood is on your head. You thwarted and defied him over this girl. And by your heartless treatment of another girl, you brought about his death. Tomorrow, I intend to take such steps as shall make it certain. You shall never touch a penny of his money. Make your way in the world as best you can with the help of a girl who is the daughter of your father's bitterest enemy.
Slowly and painfully, she went back up the stairs. Jack Renaud swayed and nearly fell.
The events of the last few days have proved too much for him. Now, where can we take him?
To the Villa Marguerite. We will look after him, Maman and I.
A doctor was sent for, who prescribed perfect rest and quiet, and advised someone to sit up with Jack. But I knew that Marta would do that anyway. Poirot and I went back to the Hotel des Bains.
Has an English lady, a Miss Robinson, arrived?
Yes, monsieur. She's in the little salon.
Good. Come along, Hastings.
But who on earth is Miss Robinson?
Oh, go on, mon ami. Do you think I wish to trumpet abroad in Merlinville the name of Duvine?
Cinderella.
Thank you, monsieur Poirot.
Now, mes enfants, for the moment we have no time for sentiment. There is work ahead of us. Mademoiselle, were you able to do what I asked you?
Here it is.
But that's the dagger that... I thought you said you threw it in the sea.
Très bien. I am very pleased with you. Now, go now and rest yourself, mademoiselle. Hastings and I have work to do. You shall see him tomorrow.
Oh, no. Wherever you're going, I'm coming too.
No, but mademoiselle...
Coming too, and that is that.
Oh, very well, but it will not be amusing. In all probability, nothing will happen.
It was quite dark now, and there was a cool breeze. Poirot set off in the direction of the Villa Geneviève. But when we were passing the Villa Marguerite...
I should like to assure myself that all is well with Jacques Renaud. Come in with me, Hastings. It would be best if Mademoiselle perhaps remained outside. Madame de Broglie might say something which would wound her.
Do you see the shadow on the blind up there? Mm-hmm. That's Marta de Broglie, surely.
Then that is where we shall find Jacques Renaud.
He is still very feverish, but he is sleeping. That is the great thing. Maman made him a tisane.
Is the doctor coming back?
Not unless we send for him.
We will come again in the morning.
Permit me to show you out, monsieur.
I hope we have not troubled you, madame.
Not at all, monsieur. This is a trying time for us all.
At least Monsieur Jacques is in safe hands now.
She will sit by his side all night with her embroidery. She wants nothing more than to be with him.
If you should need us at any time, do not hesitate to telephone us. We shall be at the Hôtel des Bains. Good night, madame.
That didn't take you very long.
I simply needed to see that all was well. You see the shadow? She's still at her post.
Where now?
To the Villa Genevieve.
The villa was in total darkness. Poirot took up a position behind some bushes in the drive where we had a good view of the house. We were almost immediately underneath the window of Madame Renaud's bedroom. The window was open.
I do not expect anything to happen for at least an hour.
So what are we supposed to do?
Watch Madame Renaud's room. It may be as long as 2 hours. Oh, my God. Where is she? That thing come from her room.
A light's come on the other side of the house. There are two people fighting.
Oui, tonnerre. Françoise must have changed her room. Now, quickly, up the tree and through the window.
But take care, Dulcie.
Take care, nothing. This is child's play to me.
Oh, dear, the door of the room is locked and bolted. It will take too long to burst it open. Where is Françoise?
Let me try.
No, it is useless. Françoise! Françoise!
You're wasting your energy. I'm the only one who can do anything.
Huh? Where are you going?
I'm going to climb round to the window by the outside.
Be careful, you'll be killed.
No, you forget she is a professional acrobat. Let us pray she's in time.
Monsieur Poirot, what's going on?
Why didn't you tell me she changed her room? Where is your mistress?
In the room, down the passage.
You...
This way. But you can't get in. The door's locked and bolted on the inside.
It's all over.
What? She's safe?
I got here just in time.
Thank God you came. I was nearly strangled.
Where is it?
Over there.
Dead?
I think so. That marble fender's got a very sharp edge and it was a very heavy fall. I'm sorry.
Sorry? But for you, I would have been killed.
But who is it?
The murderer of Monsieur Renaud and the would-be murderer of Madame Renaud.
The figure was wrapped in a fold of some dark material. I knelt down and lifted it up and looked into the dead, beautiful face of Marthe Dubreuil.
No, my friend. It was not a dream.
I simply don't understand. Surely it was Bella Duveen who killed Renaud.
She said she did. But that was simply to save the man she loved from the guillotine.
But didn't Jack Renaud say that he...
He said they both arrived at the scene at the same moment. Each took the other to be the perpetrator of the crime. But neither of them was the murderer. It was a cold-blooded, premeditated crime which could only have been committed by someone who knew what the Renaults themselves intended to do. And then I remembered what Marthe Dubreuil had told us about seeing the quarrel with the tramp. What if she had seen the tramp's death and not been called away by her mother, as she said? And what if she had heard the conversation between the Renaults which followed?
What possible motive could she have had for killing Renault?
Money. Renaud was a millionaire several times over, and at his death, half of that vast fortune would pass to his son. Oh, that is what Jack believed, and what Martha counted on. But Renaud stood inexorably in the way of her marriage with Jack. She knew that he was planning to contrive his own death. She had only to step in at the right moment and turn the farce into grim reality.
But what about the daggers? What about the one that Dulcie stole?
Jacques had 3 daggers made. One he gave to his mother, the second to Bella, and the third to Marthe Dubreuil. Oh. That was why I asked your little friend to search among her sister's effects. Bella's dagger was safe at home. It was Marthe's dagger that killed Renaud, and Madame Renaud's dagger that was stuck into the body of the tramp.
And then Marthe realized that she had to kill Madame Renaud to prevent her cutting Jack out of her will.
Ah, that was a little contrivance of my own. I persuaded Madame Renaud to play that little scene in front of the young couple so that Marthe would be forced out into the open.
Oh, what absolutely bewilders me is how she managed to get to the Villa Genevieve before we did.
Oh, that is quite simple. She slipped out of the Villa Marguerite by the back way while we were talking to her mother in the hall.
But the shadow on the blind. We saw it from the road.
Ah, my friend, what an imbecile I was. It was the shadow of her mother. One is old, one is young, but the profiles are exactly alike. But for your little acrobat with her wrists of steel, we would certainly have been too late, and Marta Dobry would have escaped through the window.
When did you first begin to suspect her? When she told us she had overheard the quarrel in the garden?
My friend, do you remember when we drove into Merlinville that first day? You asked me if I had noticed a young goddess standing at the gate, and I replied that I had seen only a girl with anxious eyes. That is how I have thought of Marta Dobry from the beginning. The girl with the anxious eyes. Why was she anxious? Not on Jacques Renault's behalf, for she did not know then that he had been in Merlinville the previous evening.
By the way, how is Jacques Renault?
Not much better. But he still knows nothing. He's still at the Villa Marguerite. But Madame Dobry has disappeared. The police are looking for her.
Was she in with her daughter, do you think?
We shall never know. Madame is a lady who can keep her secrets. And I doubt very much if the police will ever find her.
What is your friend Giraud going to say of all this?
He knows already. He has a crisis of the nerves. He has been obliged to return to Paris.
A few days later, Jacques Renault came to see us, with a resolute expression on his face.
Monsieur Poirot, I've come to say goodbye. I'm sailing for South America almost immediately. I mean to start a new life out there.
You go alone, Monsieur Jacques?
My mother goes with me. I shall try.
No one else?
What do you mean?
A girl who loves you very dearly, who has been willing to lay down her life for you?
Bella, how could I ask her? After all that's happened, could I go to her?
Women have an infinite capacity for understanding.
Yes, but I've been such a damned fool.
You have a new and wonderful life before you. Ask her to share it with you. You may not realize it, but your love for each other has been tested in the fire and not found wanting. You have both been willing to lay down your lives for each other.
And what, you may ask, became of Captain Arthur Hastings and his little acrobat?
I never knew your name was Arthur.
It's a closely guarded secret. But what am I to call you? It can't be Bella, since it isn't your name, and Dulcie seemed so unfamiliar.
Then you'll have to go on calling me Cinderella.
And you all know how the best fairy tales come to an end.
In Agatha Christie's Murder on the Links, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat, Captain Arthur Hastings by Jeremy Clyde, and Dulcie Devine by Madeline Smith. Madame Renault, Joan Matheson. Jack Renault, Stephen Tompkinson. Madame Dobry, Petra Davis. Marthe Dobry, Francesca Buller. Judge Otte, David King. Inspector Bex, Geoffrey Whitehead. Inspector Giraud, Vincent Brimble. Sergeant of Police, Ken Cumberledge. The elderly servant, Francoise, was Barbara Atkinson. The young servant, Leonie, Joanna Mackey. The hotel receptionist, Danny Schiller. The doctor, Brian Miller. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Murder on the Links was dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.